In the news.
Welcome to In the News for American Government and Texas Politics. I'm Eric McDaniel.
And I'm Jim Henson.
Well, the dust has finally settled in Iowa, and so we actually have some winners. Well, I don't know if we could necessarily call them winners or losers, but we'll call them high scores in that sense. So if we take a real quick look at the rundown in the Democratic Party, you see Hillary Clinton received 49.9% of the vote. Bernie Sanders received 49.6% of the vote. And Martin O'Malley, 0.6. As you notice, Martin O'Malley is crossed out because Martin O'Malley, after that, dropped out of the race. And so what's important to see here is when we say that the percentage of the vote, it doesn't mean they win the whole state. That's the percent of the delegates they received. Now, if we move over to the Republican Party, the Republican field, which clearly had much more players, you see Ted Cruz came out with the plurality with 27.75%, followed by Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, Ben Carson. Rand Paul was in the top five, but has just dropped out. So we have breaking news. He just dropped out, followed by Jeb Bush, Carly Fiorina, John Kasich, Mike Huckabee, who dropped out shortly afterwards. So he dropped out a couple days ago, Chris Christie and Rick Santorum. There are a lot of players here, a lot of things going on. But what's important to understand as we talk about this is that just because you received the most votes, everybody can say, oh, they won. It's like, it's a little more complicated than that because the delegates are giving out in proportion to the votes. And so we're going to spend a little time talking about that and kind of put this in perspective.
Yeah, I mean, so we can start with the Democrats. And on the Democratic side, going into this race, as we said last week, this is the race that in a lot of people's eyes, certainly in Hillary Clinton's eyes, never should have been.
Yeah.
That is, Bernie Sanders was never really considered a very powerful competitor, somebody that was going to give Hillary Clinton a real run for her money. And there's something to that in the sense that if you compare it to the Republican side, having Sanders in the field by himself means he gets all of the other people that maybe are considering an alternative, might want to go to the left of Hillary Clinton. Had Elizabeth Warren, the popular and populist kind of senator from
Massachusetts,
gotten in the race, then you probably see Hillary Clinton at a little over 40% and Sanders and Elizabeth Warren splitting that vote. But instead, we see this unbelievably close vote. And I think on election night, you really saw the sense from Hillary Clinton that this was a very close race and that they were just glad to be done with it. On Sanders' side, you saw, I think, Sanders very quickly making the point that you made. Bernie came out immediately in the race and said, the night of the primary, even before the votes were counted, and said, it's a very close race, and what's happened is, you know, we've effectively tied.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the delegate count, which we have up, you can see, you know, it's 28-21, but the number of delegates needed to actually to secure the nomination is 2,300. So this is basically saying I have a 2-point lead in the first 4 minutes of a basketball game. It really doesn't mean that much. Now, again, the idea here is that it creates momentum, that if you win in one state, it carries over to you're seen as a winner, so people are more likely to vote for you in other states. But I think it's very important that we kind of put this in perspective that, you know, 28 delegates when you need more than 2,000 means you got a lot more work to do.
Yeah, and in this sense, both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders get something each wants out of this. For Hillary Clinton, even if it was by 0.3, she gets to say, okay, we won. We didn't lose like we did in 2008. And for Sanders, who's been very effective at raising lots of money in small amounts, the night of the caucus, he was telling, you know, trumpeting to his supporters that their average contribution was $27, $28. They both get that. I think Hillary Clinton, you could see, was visibly relieved given their experience in 2008.
Yeah, when we talked about, you know, the idea of Hillary waking up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, having flashbacks of 2008, but then we remembered she's up at 2 o'clock in the morning to receive that phone call. For those of you who don't know, look up the Hillary Clinton attack ads on Obama early on. It was basically an ad of like, who's going to answer? It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. She's there to answer the phone. I'm not sure, you know, Obama to be doing at 2 o'clock in the morning, but she's up.
Playing midnight basketball, right?
Yes. Midnight basketball.
No, I think the sense of Clinton's anxiety about this and her relief, but the sense that this is really not something they want to be dealing with, and it brings back bad memories. Is just palpable. It's like, you know, flashbacks to the helicopters coming over the trees in Vietnam or something. All right, so let's talk about the Republicans.
So the Republicans, so again, Ted Cruz, again, declared the winner. But if you look at the actually delegate breakdown, you have Cruz with 8 delegates earned, Donald Trump with 7, Marco Rubio with 7, Ben Carson with 3, Jeb Bush with 1, Rand Paul with 1. But again, Rand Paul is out. But again, there you need to secure more than 1,237 votes. Now, if you look at what's upcoming, you know, Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, you actually see several of several more delegates coming forward, but really not a lot. You really don't get a big windfall of delegates really until Super Tuesday, which is in March. And so what you're seeing is really kind of a slow lead up to this. And, you know, I think what they're really trying to establish right now is legitimacy. Like, look, I'm a legitimate candidate. And I think people are saying that, you know, the fact that Trump didn't win Iowa was like, oh, he's not legitimate. But
right.
I think that may not be as clear cut as people are making it out to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the Republican side, you're right. I mean, it's about legitimacy, but it's even, you know, there's a real material thing here is that if you're one of the people really trying to gain traction in this race, particularly if you're not Donald Trump, it's really helpful to get some people out of the race at this point. And I think there were a couple of big headlines here. One, and I think this is probably frustrating to both Ted Cruz, who came in first, and even to Trump, is that Marco Rubio really did pretty well in this. And one of the things that we saw was that going into the actual caucus day, there was a lot of discussion of the fact that the polling was moving. It was very hard to poll. The poll average had Trump in first place with Cruz pretty close in second in a lot of the polls within the margin of error, meaning that, you know, you couldn't really count on Trump being for sure in first place. And we were also seeing Rubio's numbers slowly rising in a way that was pretty noticeable and accelerated in the last week. And we look at the entry polls, and at the caucuses, the networks do entry polls so that as people are going into the caucus, they ask them questions like, when did you decide who you were going to vote for? They get demographic information on the voters. And something that was really telling is that when we look at when people decided, the vote preferences by when the voter decided showed that a lot of people that decided in the last few days, probably, you know, more than almost a third of them were people that chose Rubio. And so the polls were picking that up. Second to that were, you know, another big chunk of those people that decided at the end also chose Cruz. Very few people went for Trump. If you look at the people that said they had made up their mind earlier, those were mostly Trump voters. So there was some erosion in that, I suspect. And the undecideds or the people that were thinking about voting for other candidates switched to Rubio and Cruz in the last minute, resulted in Cruz finishing first and Rubio really being very close to second with Trump, which I think really sort of has put Rubio in that position of being the default, what you want to call it, establishment, mainstream, non-insurgent candidate. All those labels imply slightly different things. The big thing is, you know, the people that are leaders in the party and the people that are the elites in the party are less worried about Rubio than they are Trump and Cruz. With Trump, I think he's kind of a wild card. With Cruz, it's really amazing how many people in Washington, D.C. and inside the business just are very direct and saying, we just don't like the guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and going along with this, the idea we don't like the guy, we have one of the tactics that Cruz used to get voters out. So he was using basically what he was using political science. And so one of the things that he's been that people point out, he's technologically savvy and he listens to political scientists. And so he did a...
Which one of those two things is better?
Technologically savvy, because I said, I've been a political... Like, I live with one. I'm like, nah, I don't trust you all. So I am one and I live with one and I work with many of them. I'm like, yeah, I don't trust you all at all. I've seen how you make decisions. No. What he did was experiments have done called get out the vote campaigns. What they basically do is say, look, we know whether or not you voted. And this is true. There are records about whether or not someone voted. That's common knowledge. No, we don't know whom you voted for, but we know whether or not you voted. And he put out these ads. Rubio did the same thing as well. Rubio just said, look, you know, your neighbors will be voting. We'll let you know if you haven't. But with Cruz, it was a little more detailed. It was like he actually gave everybody a voting score. And he had but it also had the voting violation. So the idea that, you know, you didn't vote and we have your score, we'll make your score public. Here's the score of your neighbors, and we will tell everybody else about your score. Now, Cruz has come under fire because the scores may not actually be accurate. So either they have inaccurate numbers or they fudge the numbers. And so this voting violation, to what grade you had, I think nobody got higher than a C, if I remember properly.
Right.
And so people are like, okay, was this actually true or not?
Right. I mean, if you look at the language of these mailers that the Cruz campaign sent out, it's classic what political scientists call social pressure techniques. So it really attempts to make voters feel anxious about what other people are going to think about them. And the language is very direct, and it looked quasi-official. And it came out later, and I think they took less hits for it, that the Rubio campaign had also had a template for doing this. They called theirs the Iowa Caucus Report Card. But it's the same basic approach, telling people that, you know, your neighbors are voting or not voting, and, you know, people are watching you and judging you, essentially, for whether you're a good citizen or not. Rubio didn't take much of a hit, but Cruz really got at least insider kind of press attention that resonated with some criticism that he was being dishonest and misleading. And there were some other things you would notice about Cruz in that respect too, right?
Yeah, so one of the things that jumped out with Cruz is earlier in the week, he was having a rally amongst supporters, and a Hillary Clinton supporter asked a question about Obamacare and his repeal of Obamacare. Let's roll that real quick.
I want to ask you about your plans for health care.
Yeah.
You want to repeal Obamacare. I got to tell you, my wife lost her brother this summer. He was a barber, small businessman.
Yeah.
Never got a paid day off, never got a paid vacation day, never got a holiday, couldn't afford health insurance.
Yep.
Finally got health insurance under Obamacare, got sick, went to the doctor, because he'd never been to a doctor for years. Multiple tumors behind his heart, his liver, his pancreas, and I said, we're sorry, sir. There's nothing we can do for you. Went to Cottonwood, Arizona, Flagstaff, Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, sent him home to die. My wife is a retired professor from the University of Iowa College of Nursing. She went out and took care of him for his last 2 weeks, watched him die. She still has nightmares, cries every day. Mark never had health care until Obamacare. What are you going to replace it with so people like Mark Gaffney can have health care?
So that clip is long, and you don't really see Cruz pivot in a way that, you know, is pretty questionable. But, you know, as we're talking about trusting Cruz and his trustworthy, it's funny that it's almost as if they know this, and their big banner behind them, you know, that has been one of their mottos is trust Ted, as if, I think it's almost there's a kind of protesting too much element to this. But this really resonated with you and some of the work you've done and things you're interested in.
So one of the things that people pointed out that really with fact checkers have really pointed this out is that Ted Cruz's kind of attacks on Obamacare really are not true. So for instance, in the debate, he made the statement that Obamacare was the number one job killer. So he actually got the Pants on Fire award from PolitiFact. And so what you're running to with Cruz is really what you're running to with Hillary Clinton as well. Well, so she may not be that popular amongst people, but then on top of that is this trustworthiness. So for instance, in 2008, Hillary Clinton claimed that she was giving a speech somewhere where she was being attacked. And like, no, that's not true. Then you also have the email issue. And so what we're running into is the problem of the same problem that Hillary Clinton is having with being trusted. Ted Cruz is running into this as well, where he's making some of these statements that are factually incorrect. I think, you know, we get the same problem with Donald Trump, but the problem with, I think Donald Trump, we're like, well, he's a cartoon character. Ted Cruz tried to paint himself as, no, I'm a legal scholar. I know I'm an expert at this. And so I think that may become a problem in the future where his opponents will kind of attack his integrity and can you really believe what he's saying?
And this becomes really important in presidential elections to the extent that, you know, we idealize the way that elections work and we want to talk about what people think about in terms of policy and where their ideal points are. Perceptions of candidates' personas, you know, are they trustworthy? Are they strong? how do they make me feel in response to fear and anxieties really loom large in these presidential elections as well. That said, I think, you know, we're very glad, I think, to be through with Iowa. Iowa's interesting. We get very excited about Iowa and there's all this pent-up demand because it's first. Yeah. And it, you know, there's a part of that that's fair to the extent that we're finally seeing some voting that actually counts. We're not looking at pundits or polls or, you know, and all those things have their place. But, I mean, it's understandable that when Iowa happens, everybody gets excited if you follow this stuff. However, we are done with Iowa. So, in the next few weeks, we'll see three more contests, and in a way, four, because the Democrats and the Republicans do the Nevada caucuses on different days. So, next Tuesday, February 9th, is New Hampshire. So, by our next broadcast on Wednesday, we'll know what happened in New Hampshire. Should be interesting. Things to watch in New Hampshire very quickly. New Hampshire looks very different than Iowa, as we were discussing last week. It's got a much less ideologically conservative, more moderate Republican electorate, fewer evangelicals. So expect to see different people have advantages there. It's a little bit of more of a hill for Ted Cruz, who finished first in Iowa. February 20th, we'll have the Democratic caucus in Nevada, the South Carolina primary, and then on February 23rd, the Nevada Republican caucuses. Then we're through the period of one state at a time, and then we enter a much more complex phase of the campaign, Super Tuesday, which includes the Texas primary on March 1st, and we'll be talking a lot about that, I'm sure, in the coming weeks.
Yeah, so we have a lot to talk about. There's a lot going on. But we'll be with you next week. Have a good week.
The Government 310 in the News podcast is hosted by Drs. Jim Henson and Eric McDaniel and is produced by the Liberal Arts ITS Development Studio and the Department of Government and the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Texas at Austin.